Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet by webcast and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes. This is The Unexplained. Hoping that everything is going well with you. The winter continues, but I've got that little beam of hope that maybe 5 weeks from now, we're going to turn the corner and we're going to be in springtime. Some days, it feels like springtime already with temperatures like 13 or 14 degrees some days. And then you go on the seesaw and then you're back to sub-zero overnight. It's all very strange. Thank you very much for the ongoing emails. I get to see each and every one. When you get in touch with me, please tell me, you know what I'm going to say, who you are, where you are, and how you use this show. Always good to know. And guest suggestions and your stories, always welcome at theunexplained.tv. There is a link there for emailing me. Just use that link. And if you need a reply, then please put in the subject line, reply required, or some other similar phrase, and then I will see it and respond accordingly. Thank you to Adam, my webmaster, for his hard work on the show, getting it out to you and everything else, keeping the website ticking over. My Facebook page is the official Facebook page of The Unexplained with Howard Hughes, and no other similar Facebook page, but the official one with the logo, and the website, theunexplained.tv. That's all I have to say, really. Now, is this an experiment? I don't think it's an experiment. It's just a slightly different turn that we're taking for this edition. I think we should do something different every once in a while, and that's what I'm doing now. This is the story of a woman who had what you might call a near-death experience, but it's a near-death experience with a twist. And it's a near-death experience that delivered her back here, where you and I are, very, very different. She believes with the capacity to help people to help themselves. Now, I have to remain skeptical. And I have to be on the fence about all things. It isn't for me to advocate anything, but I think it's a very interesting story. The person we're going to speak with is called Nicole Magic. At the end of it, she has a website and she'll tell you how you can find out about her. But she is a well-qualified person and was certainly into a very good professional career in various fields and ways. And her life, as you will hear, changed pretty markedly. Now, I know that stories like the one that you're going to hear will engender from some people a lot of skepticism. So if you don't want stories that are going to stretch you, please just miss this episode. But I think you're going to miss something interesting that will at least make you think. But you tell me. So Nicole Magic, the guest on this edition of The Unexplained. Remember, please make contact with me. I see all the emails. And if you have contact details for any guests that you think that I should be having on the show, then I'm always very pleased to receive those. All right, let's get to the eastern seaboard of the United States, both northern hemisphere, both in the winter time, and say hello to Nicole Magic. Nicole, thank you very much for coming on my show. How are you?
I am very well, Howard. Thank you for having me.
And look, we Brits, you know that we're weather obsessed. If you don't know, I'm going to tell you. And I know that you're in a part of the United States, not very far from Boston, Rhode Island. It's not too far from there. I was there with the Unexplained cruise at the back end of last year. Just very interested in how the weather is with you.
Well, today it's very dreary and cold and wet.
Okay. All right. Well, we're both Northern Hemisphere. The spring is coming soon. Now, a very, very strange thing happened to me before I did this conversation. And I've got to tell you, I don't talk to many people who talk about self-empowerment because it's a minefield. I think there are a lot of people in that particular sphere, although I may be wrong, selling snake oil and real estate, you know, swampland. Yes. In that. So I tend not to go into that area, but I do from time to time because I think it's useful for people. And I think that your story is particularly different and particularly interesting. And so that's kind of why we're doing this. And the other thing that I have to tell you before you tell me anything is that I normally, based on my years of journalistic training, right, working on radio stations as a news guy, I normally do as much preparation as I can for anybody that I talk to. So I read about them online. Sometimes I make discoveries about them that make me have to rethink whether I want to talk to them. But that's a whole other thing. I read about them online, and maybe very occasionally I will look at a video that they've done, maybe an interview that they've done with somebody else. I mostly don't do that because I'd rather come at it fresh. I watched 2 minutes of something that you did with somebody else who was actually very good, this person who spoke with you. And something said to me, turn it off. Talk to Nicole. That was sometimes I get this little voice and people are going to think I'm nuts and I'm not. That's why I'm doing this. The little voice said, talk to Nicole. So there's a little bit more pressure on you because I'm going to have to be led by you on this one. No pressure.
No pressure. That's okay. I can deal with that.
All right. Now, where do we start with this? I mean, you've got a very impressive biography. Nicole Magic has an interesting and extensive background, it says here, with a bachelor's degree in biology chemistry, a master's in metaphysics, and experience as a financial advisor. That's quite a bit of scope. So what is somebody who is academically inclined doing involved in the things that you're involved in, which is sort of empowering people, but also you have a hell of a story to tell that is nothing to do with hard science?
So much is in there. So much is in there. How does that even happen? And it was more of a calling and an evolution, really, because after the near-death experience, everything just escalated, amplified, and fast-tracked as well. So there's a piece of me that was just fully aligned and just running in that direction, while the other pieces of me were trying to sabotage and limit where I was and all of that. And it's really the impact that I can make in people's lives is just such an incredible element to who I am and how I work and what I'm here for. So
all right, we'll talk of this NDE that you had. I'm going to do a lot of shutting up during that, and I'm going to let you tell the story because it is remarkable. But you think, let's just say this before we talk about it, you believe that the purpose of all of that, and people go through transformational experiences when they have NDEs, they come back, a lot of them, they become musicians, the things that were important to them, self-aggrandizement, whatever it might be, ceased to be as important. You were fundamentally changed by yours, but do you think that you were put back here in order to be able to assist people? Because I think that's quite unusual, I think.
Yes, I believe I was, because it's super important for me to make an impact in the world.
All right. Let's work through that. Talk to me about the NDE. As far as I understand it, tell me if I'm wrong, and then I'm going to do a lot of silence. But you were studying, weren't you, across the river from Boston in Cambridge, Massachusetts, right? And then something happened that changed your life.
This is correct. I was working as a chemist at the time.
And what happened?
Well, I left work. I was driving down the Massachusetts Turnpike during rush hour traffic. My car radio was pretty much blaring Stinkfist by the band Tool. And there was this weird, surreal, and static energy in the air, kind of like before a lightning storm, if you know what I mean.
Okay, so like the calm before the storm.
Yeah, it was just this weird energy was happening. And then all of a sudden, my attention was diverted to the opposite side of the highway. And I saw this woman in her car swaying from an impact. And I couldn't really see her face because her hair was all in front of her face. But I could see tiny, minute details because time slowed down basically to a frame by frame, while my mind was amped up into hyperspeed. So I was having full-on conversations in my head, like somebody who just talks really, really fast like this, right? And I was having this conversation in my head, asking myself, okay, this lady's so beautiful, and look at her hair, gorgeous black curly hair, and look at how the sun is glistening off of these hairs, certain particular hairs, and creating this caramel golden highlights. And then I'm looking at her button-down shirt because that's all I can see besides her hair. And then going down further, I see that her car door is dented in. And so I'm asking myself, okay, well, where is this? How did this happen? Why is that door dented all in? And where is this car that actually hit her? So I was wondering all that stuff, and then all of a sudden I looked up through my windshield, up towards the sky, but I wasn't seeing any sky at all. I was seeing this guy in his car about to land right in my lap, right where my steering wheel was. And I just saw his face completely contorted from this panic and terrified face.
So this guy was about to land in your lap. Were you in an open top car?
No,
How did that
I
happen
was
then?
driving a Honda Civic,
Okay, well,
so
I'm very well familiar with the Honda Civic. I've got something similar here. But how did that, as far as you could rationalize, and time slowed down and it was all surreal by the sounds of this, how was this happening? How was it unfolding?
this was still in that frame by frame. So it was still in super slow motion while I was gathering all kinds of information at this hyper speed. So I was seeing his face contorted. He was screaming in terror. His eyes are like wide open, bugging out. And our eyes met for just a second or a piece of a second. And in that moment, I entered a completely different space. So I saw that he was going to land in my lap, right where my steering wheel was. His car was going to topple over on top of mine. The roof of my car was going to squish down on my head, snapping my neck, and I was dead.
Gee.
So in that moment, when I saw all of that, I then my consciousness moved into this space that I met with all of my family members that were really close and dear to me. And I had an entire conversation with every single one of them.
You're talking
Mainly,
about people who were alive at the time, not people who'd passed.
yes,
Okay.
exactly. And it was like I sat down and had a whole conversation, especially with my kids. And then when I was done with all of those conversations, I turned towards this energy that was pretty much enveloping me. And it was very loving and peaceful. And I just said, okay, I'm ready. And this peace and love that I've never felt before with that intensity just came over me, wrapped me up like this thick, warm blanket on a freezing cold day. And it felt so good. It was like I just melted into it. And then as I melted into it, everything went black.
But listen, let's just come back to this side of life for a second, because you'd obviously been involved in a what we call over here a road traffic accident. And I know what the road, I know that particular road that you were on. And at certain times of day, and I happened to be on that road last November. And it can be very bright, very crispy. You know, if it's it was actually a Friday. We're recording this on a Friday. It was a Friday evening. There was so much traffic and so many SUVs and so many people, and you just think, "Oh, I hope everybody's going to be safe here because there are so many people determined to get to wherever they've got to go." So you had a road traffic accident, and you were involved in it. You were injured in it. How come you were not? You were not feeling pain from the injuries that you sustained.
Well, it was a very weird and inexplicable thing that happened because the next thing that I remembered was going through this tunnel and the lights were coming at me and the geometric forms were passing by me at crazy speeds and then I came out on the other side of it. And when I came out on the other side of it, I was driving my car at a different place on the Massachusetts Turnpike. It was actually over 2.5 miles away from where this incident took place. And when I came out on that other side, it was like I was holding onto my steering wheel and I gasped for air like somebody who had been held underwater to the brink of death and then pulled up like, just this as much air as I could get in my lungs at one time. And then, as my consciousness came back into this body, I was like, oh my God, I almost just died. And I'm looking around in front of me. There's no cars on the highway. And then immediately I said, "Oh my God, I should have just died." And I'm looking in my rear view and there's nobody behind me. And then I was like, "Oh my God, am I dead?" And I looked across the whole highway and I just saw this one lone car coming up on the opposite side. I was so confused. And it was literally during the worst time for rush hour traffic on this major turnpike, no cars around. So I was sitting there thinking to myself, "Oh my God, yeah, am I dead? And which side of the highway am I actually on? Is this the highway to heaven or am I on the highway to hell? What is happening right now?"
I mean, look, I've just laughed there, and it's no laughing matter, really. This is really serious stuff. Okay, I had this image as you were talking about that of a chessboard. You know, where I don't play chess, but I watch people do it, and you leapfrog pieces over, you know, other pieces, and eventually somebody wins. That's about all I know about chess. However, are you saying to me that you were involved in a serious road traffic accident and you were aware of the participants in that, the people affected by that, and what happened to them? You were aware of what happened to you, but you were taken away from it.
I'm going to say yes and no on that because my theory is that I died in that accident just as how I saw it when I was playing, seeing it in my head. To me, it feels like a vision, but I think it actually played out. And then I think when I died, that's when I went through the tunnel, but then my consciousness came into a different dimensional aspect or version of me. I merged there, so perhaps in that dimension, I had maybe left a few minutes earlier and was down the way or whatever. And because I don't remember what time it was, and if I had left on time in a different dimension, there wouldn't be all of that traffic. I actually left work late that day. So if my consciousness merged with this other version of me.
Do you think that you clicked into another timeline?
Yeah, because what ended up happening was a year later, on the anniversary date of that incident, I had a friend who had started a job in a place in Framingham because this took place right in a certain section where Framingham is. And this friend said that she thought of me because I had told her about the incident, and the people that she was sitting around the lunchroom with, they were talking about that incident that a guy hit a woman on one side of the highway, that side that he was on, went up over the Jersey barrier, landed on another woman, and they both died.
Could you research it any further than that?
It was very weird because, and I've asked in podcasts before, if anybody can find anything on it, I've looked, I've tried to find whatever article or anything on that Massachusetts Turnpike near Framingham on March 3rd of 2006 is when it happened. And it was between the 4 o'clock and 5 o'clock hour
It would
on
be
that Massachusetts
worth
Turnpike.
researching, because
Yeah.
if you could find something that stands that up, then you have literally the greatest story ever told. I know that phrase has been used before. I wonder if it's worth checking, like with when I was staying in Boston for a night before flying back to the UK, I listened to one of my favorite radio stations, WBZ, which is like a rolling news station there, WBZ Boston. And they would probably have records of things that happened and stuff that they reported on that day. You know, most radio stations in this country and your country too have to keep archives. So they could go back to that afternoon. They could maybe find out some answers for
Maybe.
you.
I would love that.
Meanwhile, back here, then you're somebody, you come around and you're unscathed and you feel that, I mean, do you feel, I'm making an assumption here, do you feel that you're somebody different then?
Oh yeah, it was a complete change because before that incident, I had undiagnosed postpartum depression that spiraled into further depression. And I was obsessed with thinking about how I could die, how I could exit the world. I didn't want to be here. I was just miserable. And because of that, I would fantasize about my death and how I could just, make something happen, or I could die like this, or whatever the case was. And every day, every moment that I had that, I would fantasize about it. And then I would tell myself, but I have these kids. At the time, I had three little boys. And I just kept telling myself, just hold on, just a little longer, just a little longer. And it became my mantra. And I probably said it hundreds of times a day, every single day, for over a year.
So you were living for them.
Yes, only for them at that time. But then when this happened, it just immediately, that love vibration was this massive healing vibration that dissolved all of that depression, every last bit of it. And I ended up having this fervor for life. And when I came home and I saw my second son, he always greeted me at the door. So that son would come to the door and I just grabbed that kid. And I squeezed him, probably maybe a little too much, I don't know, but I squeezed him so tight and I was just like, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you so much, I love you so much. And I was just so full of this energy that I couldn't get rid of it all.
Were they aware that you were different? Were people, your mum, for example, were those people aware that you had changed?
There were little things that came out over the course of time. So yes, it was a very profound change that I sat there and I'm like, why am I even doing this? And what is going on? And I'd have these visions and I always could see auras, energy, and see and hear spirits when I was young. But this was just out of this world amplified. And I could see things in people, and I'd go up to strangers and just say, oh, you know what? Do you have? Are you feeling like this, or do you have this pain? And do you mind if I touch you or put my hands near you? And I would be, moving bones, and things would be coming out of people, and I would see it, and then they'd say, "Oh my God, it's gone!" And I would have just seen it come out of their body and dissolve before it hit my hand.
Gee, I mean, that to me, I mean, I don't want to trivialize this, but that almost sounds like that great film, The Green Mile, where that guy had an ability to interact with people and they would be cured of whatever. Look, I'm a journalist, okay? I have to be skeptical here. And first question is, how could you know that? And sometimes these things are mind over matter with people. They think they've been healed, so they are healed, and all of those sorts of things. Did you feel that you needed, after this experience and the changes that you feel that you went through, did you feel any need to talk to a professional about what you've been through?
I didn't want anybody to think I was crazy because I was still trying to figure it out myself because there was so much stuff that felt so different. And there were these weird anomalies that I had very different memories than my kids did. They started bringing things up that I didn't remember the same way. And I would say that I don't remember it like that. This is what I remember. And no, that didn't happen. This happened. And they would. My entire family, my kids, and my husband at the time, there were a few times where, like one time especially, he said, "How do you not remember that? That was one of the most memorable things that we did with the kids." And it got to the point where the kids would get disappointed because I couldn't remember the things the same way that they did.
And did you remember things that he and they didn't recall doing?
Yeah, there were things that were around the house or not in the house anymore or in the house now or in a different place, like a picture according to me, it was in the wrong spot, and a lamp that was supposed to be there that wasn't there, and just things like that. And we never had something like that, or the picture was always there in that same spot. You put that picture there in that spot. I didn't remember it like that. It wasn't like that. It was very different. So these little dimensional changes, there are going to be things that are different in another dimension, because that's what makes it a different dimension, is that it's different somewhere. The really important stuff seems to be the same. It's the trajectory moving forward that is changed because you're on a different track.
This is almost akin to the so-called Mandela effect, where people have a different recollection. There are some people who believe that Nelson Mandela did not come out and lead his country, but he died in incarceration in Robben Island off Cape Town, and various other things that people think that they remember but never happened. It almost sounds to me like you believe that you're sort of living proof of that. There are timelines and you clicked into another.
Yeah, so if we're constantly jumping dimensions with the decisions that we make, even so like small decisions to these huge, gigantic shifts and changes and manifesting and near-death experiences, you have enough people that are jumping around all over the place, you're going to have a bunch of different memories at some point, which I think is the Mandela effect.
All right, let's sweep it all up together and just gather what we've got here. Okay. You go through this accident, but you don't. You are perhaps plucked from it and dropped into another timeline. You come out of it changed with a different perspective on life. You're not depressed anymore. Your kids think you've changed. Your husband at the time doesn't quite understand how you can't remember things that were important to you both, which can give people problems, I suspect, if people have different recollections. When you've got that collection of stuff in your kit bag, what do you do? How did you cope with it then?
I journaled a lot. I had a lot of visions. So it felt like I was just guided, and I had this draw that just kept pushing me forward, 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 even while I was kind of going through an existential crisis on who the heck am I now? Because I feel completely different. I felt weird in this body, and I was trying to figure it out.
And you're convinced, and I'm saying this in the nicest possible way, and I'm really interested, and I want all of this to be absolutely true because it's fascinating, and I wonder if anybody else has been through anything like this, but are you sure you didn't have a stroke or some mental aberration, short-term thing that made you, that the mind is a wonderful thing, that made you conjure up that occurrence on the road and made you change internally, made your mind change, ceased the depression just because the depression was too much for you? Maybe a fuse blew somewhere and you just decided, I'm not going to be depressed anymore, I'm going to be different. I don't know. You're absolutely convinced that nothing physical happened to you that could have made those changes?
Yes.
Boy.
I'm sure of that.
Who did you tell?
Ooh, I told a few really close friends. And I started off there because I wanted to make sure, you know, what are the questions that people are going to ask me? And I started there because they also allowed me to practice with, there were things that I knew to do to help people to heal. And I wanted to practice them, and I needed somebody close enough to me so I wasn't, you know, going up to strangers all the time. And I was working at different stores that were more metaphysical shops that were more open to it. So I told people in those realms that were more along that quantum physics, metaphysical, holistic realm.
Right, people who are on that wavelength. When you say you were working in those metaphysical shops and places like that, what were you doing?
Yeah, I had begun doing aura readings with, I could see auras all my life. So I started using it as, that was the easiest way for me to show people what I saw on different levels of how I saw energy. And there was actually, I don't know if we have time for this.
Yeah, no, we do.
Okay, there was actually this time when I was setting up to do the aura readings, and I was at the shop that I was at, you know, I did appearances at many, many times throughout a whole bunch of years. And this woman was talking to the owner, and she was telling about how she can never get close to her nephew, and he always cries, and all this stuff. So So I was curious and I looked over at her and I could see this static energy up over her shoulder. And I finished what I was doing and I walked over and I told her that I could see this energy over her shoulder, and it's the static energy that was connected to a past life of hers. And if she didn't mind, I would clear it out for her because that's what he's seeing and it is really scary to him. And with the things that I saw in there were just really graphic and horrific and traumatic and very like brutal and sexual. So there wasn't a surprise in my mind that this kid, this little baby toddler or whatever, was, having this conniption every time. She could not bond with this kid. So a few minutes I worked on her in that quantum realm. I usually go through the torsion field, and it's quantum physics. Torsion field is connected to the aura and the energy and your energetic imprint that goes transcends through time. And I cleared it out, and then at the end of it, because I said, you may or may not feel anything while I'm working on you, and it doesn't matter, you'll be fine. And I said, I'm done. And she said, well, how will I know? And I said, well, you'll know. You'll definitely know. And then 2 days later, I got a call from the owner saying that the sister had come in and said, I don't know what that girl did to my sister, but I need her to do something to me because she brought her son to go see her sister. And for the first time ever, the boy wanted her to pick him up. They had a great time. He didn't cry at all, not once. They bonded all day, laughed, had made memories, and everything was awesome.
I mean, it could have been mind over matter. I can't quite see how. And if there are people still with us on this side of life who recall that, then you made a big change in somebody's life. But how do you come to terms with that? You know, one of my favorite movies, and I know it's now quite old, but then so am I, was Phenomenon, starring John Travolta. I don't know whether you know that movie. But it's a movie about somebody who was
Yes.
changed in a way according to the movie. And I always cry when I see that. I'm going to have to watch it again. You know, I'm not afraid to admit that. What the hell? I'm old enough not to be afraid, not to be
That was
worried
a good
about
movie.
that. But, you know, he went through an experience that transformed him. You clearly believe that you went through an experience that transformed you. Do you ever feel that you want to be academically studied about this? Because one way to take this forward, rather than just say, I did this, and I know that I've been through this and I can do that, maybe an academic study by somebody who's interested in this, not somebody who's out to debunk you, but somebody who's interested to understand you. There would be value in that, wouldn't there?
There totally would be value in that, and I would be completely in a state of agreeing to do something according to that.
How else did your life change? How do you feel about things?
I feel very intensely about some things. I feel like definitely the healing element, like being able to work with energies and healing and all of that. The visions and the intuitive aspect just amplified. I am able to shift out of emotional states that are negative and show people how to shift out of those. And I work with people to erase their limiting beliefs so they can manifest whatever they want. So it's really this, I'm very content and continue to grow and see how I can go further and further and further, and like nothing really phases me in a negative way anymore.
In this
So
segment
it's
of our
good.
conversation, we've got a couple of minutes left. I think there's a little bit that's missing. And the bit that is missing is the experience of the accident. Now, if this is a near-death experience, my mother had one when she, I know that my listener will be saying, yes, you're going to tell that story again. I'm going to tell it quick because you haven't heard it, Nicole. My mother was 10 years of age, was nearly dying of pneumonia. The doctor said to my grandmother, your daughter is going to either make it through the night or she's not going to. She's going to go through a crisis. And we've just got to pray for her. That's all I can do. My mother told the story to her dying day and all through my life of going to a wonderful place with marvelous colors and meeting these beings. she didn't want to come back. It was so wonderful, so beautiful, so excellent. And they said, you have to go back. And if she hadn't come back, I wouldn't be talking to you now. Did you have any experience like that?
I had that experience where that whole love enveloped me. And what ended up happening was, as I was sitting in that, I actually had said, I'm ready. Like, I'm ready to go wherever we're going. And when then everything had gone black and I was going through that tunnel. So it was almost like, well, that was where I was going, was the next, like my consciousness, because I died in one dimension, my consciousness merged in another dimension because I'm not done doing what I came here to do. And that other dimensional life was just part of that experience.
And the person that you were in Cambridge, Massachusetts before that day, did you go back to that life? It sounds to me as if you just walked away from what you were doing at that point. Is that how it happened, or was it gradual?
It was, so that happened in 2006, and in 2013, I had left chemistry and never went back.
No regrets?
No.
Okay.
I loved my job as a chemist. I love chemistry. I love biology, all of the science. And I think that's why I work in the quantum physical realm.
This is a hell of a story, Nicole. And I have a lot of skeptical listeners. And, you know, I welcome skepticism. I am skeptical myself. They will have first of all wondered why I'm doing this. And my answer to that is, well, number one, it's my show. And number two, we have to do different things. Otherwise, we ain't going to learn anything. That's why we're doing this, I think. But they will say, this woman is either on the make, you know, she's trying to make money out of all of this. And it's a hell of a story, but that's what it is. It's a story. Or she's just nice, but deluded, and she's not really doing any harm, so fair enough, but you know, that couldn't happen. What do you have to say to them?
I would say the money that I was making as a chemist, I wouldn't have jumped ship and gone into this to replace a salary of a chemist.
I don't have an answer for that, you know? You know, these people who do radio shows are supposed to have an answer for all things. I'm going to leave that there because I don't have an answer for that one. That's interesting. And did some guiding voice, you know, like that little voice said to me, I listen to my inner voice, okay? When it tells me something, it is very frequently right. And that little inner voice said, forget the preparation, talk to Nicole. And that's what I'm doing. Did you have a voice that said to you, okay, you have a task now, you're going to make people's lives better, and here's how you do it, Nicole?
I think there were, I don't know if it was a voice or just this knowing and a pull. That's how I can describe it. It's kind of weird because you feel something and it's almost like you're just guided in a certain direction, and I was having all these visions and things didn't make sense. So I'd have to look things up that I had never seen before or heard of before. And I would, you know, hear about something in my third eye and, or telepathically, or however you want to put it, it doesn't really matter. I would think something up and it was something that was real, that I had never heard of before. And it kept happening and happening and happening. And it was just happening at a faster and faster rate that I was able to start getting information for other people. I mean, there was one time that for a period of time, I was doing mediumship sessions. I tend not to do that because I'm doing more of the coaching and consulting and speaking things. So I have a very special preparation for that. I don't always have the time for. So it's once in a while I will do something like that. But I had this mediumship session with somebody, and it was the person's father, and he was, you know, their personalities come through, things that they say. He was talking about the whole family. I mean, I had gone to the wake because I knew the people, but barely, because I had just started renting a space from their building. And that's why I went to the wake, was out of respect. And when I went into the place, the father was just talking to me and telling me about all the brothers. And I just said, we kind of have to talk later, later. And when I sat down, the father showed me a piece of their house that the electrical was out of whack and it was eventually going to cause a fire. And I said, well, I don't know if this is even anything, but you're going to have to get this looked at. And it's like down by the bulkhead. It's in this very particular spot. So he ended up hiring somebody to go take a look at it. And they said, yeah, how did you know that this was even here? Because I mean, it's okay right now, but it is in its stages of it was going to cause a fire if you didn't let it, if you didn't do something about it.
And presumably that's not your expertise. You wouldn't have known that had you not sensed it. Listen, I'm not going to argue with you about that, because I can remember working with a guy in London on the radio called David. And David had a BMW Spider, I think it's called, sports car. Okay,
nice one.
Yeah,
that's
nice
a nice
little
car.
Sports car. And one day I just felt impelled to say to him, David, lovely car, take a look at your spare tire, because there's something wrong with it. And he looked at me as much as to say, you are nuts. Next day, he comes back to me and said, how the hell did you know that? And I looked at him and I said, David, I don't know. So I think, you've obviously, if we are to believe what you say, then you have tapped into this to the nth degree. I use a tiny, tiny little bit of it, but I kind of know that it's there. And maybe everybody has this. What do you say?
I think everybody has the ability to, and in different ways, because sometimes people see things, sometimes people hear things, they know things. But it depends on how you tap in and how much you're willing to go in, because part of it, as you uncover more and more ability to tap in at deeper levels, you've got to do the work on yourself. You've got to release fears, and you've got to release things that hold you back, things that say that you can't, like all the limiting beliefs that are in there. When you start peeling back those layers, that intuition just starts sparking up.
Like most people, I've had a certain amount of, I nearly used another word there, a certain amount of garbage to deal with in my life, okay? A lot of it has been connected with the thing that I love doing, which is broadcasting, speaking on the radio since I was a kid. It was what I wanted to do. I loved the great American broadcasters, but God, I paid a price for it. I never made great amounts of money out of it. I got awards. I'm looking at some of them on my wall here. I did really well. But prosperity kind of eluded me in those terms. I'm telling you this story for a reason. I don't care who knows that now. I'm old enough, not to worry. But I didn't have the greatest experiences along the road in this broadcasting career. Although I'm doing great things, and now I've created my own show, and I can do what I want my way, and that's how I like it. So, poor but happy, I think is the answer to it. But what I'm saying this for a reason, and this, I bet there are loads of people listening to this now, even if they don't believe anything that you're saying. They've got the little fantasy in their head. Nicole believes that she jumped into another timeline that was quantitatively and qualitatively better than the one that she was in before. Why the hell can't I do that? And if I can, how do I do it?
Well, you can. And how you do it is, it depends on how big of a jump you want to do, because I think we usually do minor jumps, little jumps, little jumps, little jumps when we start manifesting what we want. And it's basically doing the work. And I've worked with some people that have gone through some traumatic events. And when you go through a traumatic event that tests you, that's where you get the bigger jumps. So if you go through little things that you're peeling back layers on and sloughing off the limiting beliefs that are holding you back. Like, let's say you want a promotion. That's going to be a small jump where you determine that you're going to get that promotion and you start taking the actions to do that and getting rid of, like, if you're not confident enough to step into that promotional role, you won't get it in one dimension, but you'll get it in another if you have that confidence. So you work on that confidence, step into that in the other dimension. And then let's say it's a bigger thing where people are going through divorce and just a bunch of different things that are happening all at once, those times in your life where it just feels like everything is falling apart. I went through this with when I had mercury poisoning and I almost died from that. It was like everything was falling apart in my life, or seemingly. So I say seemingly negative things, but they're pushing you in a direction that's in to step into something that's more aligned with your soul's purpose. So when you do that, it creates that ripple for you to open up, for you to shift into that space. So then you jump.
That completely conflicts, though, doesn't it? I'm sorry I jumped in here, literally.
Yeah.
That conflicts with the notion that our paths are predetermined. We're experiencing these things, whether we're experiencing a load of garbage or whether we're having a veil of joy in our lives. We're doing that for a reason. It was all predetermined. And if you start messing with that, if you start programming for great wealth or great change, or I want to skip the track and move to a better dimension of reality, you're going to play with the order of things. You're going to tamper with the prime directive. What's your thoughts about that?
I would say to that, I'm going to say to that, then what is free will? If everything is predetermined, then you have no choice. So what are we doing? Why aren't we just sitting around doing whatever the heck we want, doing nothing? And why are people working so hard to attain certain things and things like that? So we do have free will, and it's what you do with that free will that determines which track you're going to take. It is like a choose your own adventure game.
When people ask you, what are you? What do you do for a living? You know, sometimes I had somebody ask me, I had to go for one of a number of medical scans the other day. And a very nice person doing the scan said, with a voice like that, what do you do for a living? You know, she wanted to know what I did. And quite a lot of the time, I just want to say, I drive a bus, or I work in the supermarket. But I said, well, I do a radio show. I think it speaks to who we are. You know, it's a question of our identity. So when people ask you, what do you do, and, how do you do it, you've got to give them a simple answer. Maybe you're standing in the, maybe you're at Walmart in the queue, or maybe you're in a restaurant or something. How do you answer them? What do you say?
Well, I usually tell them that I'm the empowerment alchemist. And what that means is I take people from resistance to resilience by erasing their limiting beliefs and helping them step into true authenticity.
I don't expect you to give me names or addresses. Can you think of any case studies, people you've helped? Talk to me about maybe one or two and how you think you've helped them.
Well, I like small teams. So I started off with my team when I ran a team in chemistry, and I created a very specific plan, conscious leadership style, to shift all of my people into more from green into high functioning scientists. And now they're all, associate directors, fellow scientists, those kinds of things. I took another team in sales and marketing who had a lot of different beliefs, and their beliefs were canceling each other out, triggering each other into victim, villain, hero modes all over the place, losing clients left and right, into a space where they became a high functioning team. And all of their strengths were complementing each other, and they were stepping into the roles that went along with those strengths, and then sloughing off the limiting beliefs that held them back. They started making the money that they were looking to make, all the things that were happening. They were getting the gigs, they were getting huge deals versus these like chasing ghosts and all kinds of stuff like that. I had a salon owner who came to me that said nobody was taking her seriously. She had this business that was a really great business, and she wanted to bring it up to $1 million value business, but nobody was taking her seriously. She couldn't hold a team to stay in a team and communication, and there was too much turnover. So we worked on some of her limiting beliefs, got rid of that, and within months, everything entirely turned over, and now she's got this seven-figure business.
Wow. Okay, so with the teams and with this person, do you think that you did this for them or you showed them something in themselves? Because it sounds to me like you're doing psychology on them.
Well, there is what I do is I uncover the blind spots and the limiting beliefs that are so subconscious that they don't see them. And then we take those out and we reprogram those beliefs into something that is supportive and moves them forward. So it's not that I do everything for them because I can't do the work that is needed by the person, the individual that is involved. There's some serious work, inner alchemy that has to get done. So I guide them through that. I expose what is hidden from them, and then I guide them through it so that the work gets done, and I show them how to do the work, and I give them that safe, supportive, non-judgmental space to do it and work with them until it's done.
Okay, you might be losing some people here, so let's find them. How much of this is mystical and how much of this is simply good business practice? You know, we all watch that. We've got a program over here called Dragon's Den, where a bunch of people who want to get investment from these people who know better than they do go and pitch their thing. I think they've got a different name. I think it's called Shark Tank, isn't it, in the US?
Oh,
Something like
yeah,
that.
Shark Tank.
Yeah, Shark Tank. Same show. How much of it is something that is mystical, like you believe happened to you, and how much is those people just kind of changing their mindset?
Well, it is huge in shifting their mindset, right? Mindset is everything. And because everything is energy, frequency, and vibration, our minds, what we think, what we say, is the vibration of what we create. So it all comes back to what you believe. You'll only allow to have what in your life to happen, what according to what you subconsciously believe. And some of those programs run so deep from your ancestors that you can't even see what you're doing. So that's where you need somebody else. I teach people how to be able to access and identify the beliefs that they can change, and I show them how to change those themselves too. I'm looking for those deep-seated subconscious things that you don't even know you're doing. For example, Howard, has anybody ever said to you, "Oh, when you say that or when you do that, you look just like your father, uncle, mother, whoever." Those things that people say, and you're sitting there saying, "Oh, no, not me." Yeah, you are,
My
because that
father held
program.
himself back, okay? Why am I telling you this? I've never said this on the show before, or anywhere else, to be honest. My father held himself back. He could have had promotion in the police, he could have had a bigger house and all those things, but he didn't, because of where he came from in Liverpool, he believed that he could go so far and no further. I think and we used to say, "Dad, why don't you have more ambition? Why don't you take your police exams?" He was a family man. He gave us the time, not the exams, which was lovely to have Dad. But he could have done more. He didn't believe that he could do more. And we used to not criticize him, but my sister and I would reflect on it sometimes. Here I am at this stage in my life. I think that I've done some of those things to myself. And that's come through from him and maybe from his dad and from their background. So I guess just in pure psychological terms, I'm sure those things have an impact. I watched a great, it's probably shown in the United States too, a great biopic about Cary Grant, you know, the British-American actor, movie star, great films like North by Northwest, which I love. And Cary Grant, wonderful man, but he sabotaged because of his past and his experiences and all the rest of it in his family. He sabotaged all the relationships that he had, and he knew that he was doing it. And then towards the end, the thing that absolutely got me and everybody else who's seen it, got me choked at the end of this, is where he realized that that's what he was doing and made a change. Interesting. I don't know how all of this stuff, though, And I'm a great believer in people, if they work on it, can change themselves. I'd like to be able to do more of it, but, you know, I'm there. I'm with the program. Just in the final few minutes of this, how do you believe that all of this stuff that you're talking about now is connected to the car accident that you say that you missed and that great mystical experience that you tell me that you went through? How are they connected?
Ever since that accident and my life changing in that positive way, dissolving the depression, moving into that space, amplifying the ability to facilitate healing, intuition, and all of those things, it has been a nonstop growth and progression of more and more and more of that. And because of that track is I have created a life that no matter what is happening around me, I absolutely love.
And I know what's your aim in life? Do you want to get rich?
I don't know if I want to be rich. I'm doing what I love and I'm paying the bills and I have some extra. And of course we want to amplify and grow and do more, do better. I can provide more to my kids with making more and provide more to charity and things like that, making more.
Now, in the United Kingdom, and we're not broadcasting now, so we don't have the same regulations, but I tend to do these shows just as we would do them in our very regulated broadcasting system. So I have to say two things that I maybe should have said at the beginning. I've heard everything with great interest that you've said, and it's fascinated me. But, you know, personally, please, nobody listening to this thinking that I think that I'm endorsing any of this, because I'm not allowed to do that. Please make your own decisions. And, you know, this conversation is offered to you primarily for entertainment purposes only and to make you think. That is what I would say if I was on the radio now. And when it comes to healing, got to see your own doctor, your general practitioner, as we say in the United Kingdom, first before all that. I mean, that's the stuff that I would have said on the radio. And I'm hoping that you wouldn't disagree with any of that.
No, I don't disagree with any of that. I mean, I was in science and medical science, so there's definitely a place for all of that and a need for all of that, too. We also do have this energetic body that can, it knows what it needs.
Yes.
So it can heal itself under the right conditions. Again, like kind of like Dr. Bruce Lipton, his cells and what is their environment? What is the internal environment as the external environment as well? What is the external environment creates an internal environment. So it's both at the same time. So when somebody facilitates a healing, it's more along the line of, think of Nikola Tesla, everything is energy, vibration, and frequency. If somebody is holding a field of energy around a portion of somebody else's body and holding a vibration through themselves as a facilitator, what is happening is the cells are given the chance to entrain up to that vibration and heal themselves. That's what healing is. When somebody says, I am a healer, you are a healer of your own body, not a healer to somebody else. You are a healing facilitator if you are helping somebody else to heal, because you're only holding a vibration high enough for somebody to entrain up to in order to heal.
Right. Okay. But equally, somebody's listening to this with a sore throat that won't go away, please go to the doctor. But look, I hear everything that you say, and I'm a great believer in the power of mind. When my sister gets very frustrated with me, because she knows that I can do this stuff, right? And she says, you can do it, but you don't. And the only example I can give you as the end of this, to say that, to show that I think we're on a similar page, okay? I used to work for a big radio station in London. It was the biggest. It was called Capital FM. And we had like one in three Londoners every morning. If you assume 9 million people in London, 3 million of those people will have listened to us every single morning. And I was the news guy, but I also went out on remotes with them all around the world and did all kinds of stuff. And, you know, got to meet McCartney and Bowie and all sorts of people, which was wonderful. And Debbie Harry and all, you know, I got to meet them, which was great. But we had a tough man for a boss,
okay?
He was a hard guy. But the one thing I remember about him was that he used to say to us, think number one. And we did. And we thought number one, and we were consistently number one. We used to look at the bar charts for all the other radio stations in London. And it was like the Empire State Building and some tiny little office block below them. All the others were like tailing off into nothing. They were down, 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 down. And we were number one, not just by a small margin, but by a huge margin. And I've always believed that, yes, he was a very tough man, but he did instill that in us. And we all thought that we were the best. We did not entertain the possibility that we were anything other than the best. And I did the news there, wrote it, produced it, spoke it. I didn't want to be number two. I wanted to be best. You know, God, I drove myself stupidly to do that. But, you know, I just had to be. So I became best. You know, I became best by believing it. And we all did. We were, for that snapshot in time that doesn't exist anymore, you know, businesses change. But for that moment in time, because of the mindset that was instilled into all of us, we became the best. We became number one. Undisputably. So I think these things work. Now, I don't know whether this conversation went the way that you wanted it to go. I think it was interesting and it was something different for me. And my apologies to people who wanted to hear more UFOs or more ghosts this week. I thought it was time we did something different. We just did. If people want to look at your website and find out about you, Nicole Magic, where do they go?
They would go to magicllc.com, magicllc.com. And everything is there. It points you to my marketplace for free resources, or my scheduler is at nicolemagic.as.me.
Nicole, thank you for your time.
And thank you.
Nicole Magic. I found that a very interesting conversation. I know that some of you will think that that is a little beyond the pale and maybe it's too outlandish for you, but I think every so often you've got to do something different. You can't always do shows about cryptozoology or UFOs, UAPs, interesting though they are, or ghost investigations, fascinating though they are. Every so often you have to do something different and maybe step beyond your comfort zone. You tell me what you make of it. I found that interesting, and the kernel of it is that maybe to an extent greater than we are aware, consciously, we are the masters of our own destiny. There's a little burning hole, a little nugget within me that chimes with. But you tell me what you think. More great guests in the pipeline here at the home of the unexplained online. My name is Howard Hughes, and until next we meet, please stay safe, please stay calm, and above all, please stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.